All right, welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 15. Yes, 15. I am Corey Murphy, here with Daryl Feltner.
Heyo!
And we're going to be joined by Nick Kohler in a little bit here, as soon as he's available. But we figured we'd get started, and
So a couple episodes ago, we did, like, introductions.
Yeah, oh, you got one?
I do, I got one.
Awesome.
Favorite Magic deck of all time.
Favorite Magic deck of all time? That you've played,
that you've watched. Like,
oh, yeah, that's easy.
Like, one favorite deck.
That's
Go
easy.
Ahead.
It is Birthing Pod, Modern Birthing Pod.
Modern Birthing Pod? All right, I was going to have to ask which specific Birthing Pod, because there was a standard version, people play it Legacy, I haven't seen it pop up in Vintage,
No, I did play a Legacy version of it, and I liked it for a few games, but it was just not good. it was basically Nick Fit featuring Birthing Pod.
Yeah, that's the way it was.
But actually, a close second, though, is in the Thragtusk days of Standard, I played a really fun Bant deck that just abused Restoration Angel Blink. And it wasn't the stock Bant list. It was, like, Elvish Visionary and Borderland Ranger and stuff. And I, like, ramp into, like, Cyclonic Grift before it was cool.
That's kind of a Cyclonic Grift deck. That's kind of sweet.
Yeah, it was super fun.
I can dig that.
All right, how about you, Daryl?
That is also an easy question. And most people would know, actually. Most people, you'd expect me to say Miracles, Legacy, circa 2008 before Abrupt Decay was printed. No. Mm-hmm. It's actually Eternal Slide. I don't know if you know what that is.
No, explain.
So it was a standard deck in Onslaught Mirrodin Standard. Astral Slide, Eternal Dragon, Lightning Rift.
Okay, but it
was Onslaught Mirrodin. They called it Eternal Slide because you would combo with Eternal Witness. So you'd Astral Slide out your Eternal Witness. Mm-hmm. It would come back, you'd pick up your Cycling card, so you could Astral Slide out your Eternal Witness and pick up your Cycling card. And so you could just keep cycling your way through your deck with Eternal Witness.
Nice.
And so you'd get multiple Astral Slides in play, so that at the end of your opponent's turn, you could slide all the creatures out, your Eternal Witness would come back. Like, you'd slide your Eternal Witness out, it would come back, you'd get a Cycle card back, and then you'd slide out, like, three of their guys, attack them, their guys would come back, and then you would slide out your Eternal Witness, get back a Cycling card, slide out their guys, because you had multiple Astral Slides.
This is straight up Eternal Witness, right? Did you mention Eternal Dragon in there?
Eternal Dragon is in there.
Okay, alright. So the name really fits.
Yeah, Eternal Slide. It was the most fun deck, like, ever. It played, like, Akroma's Vengeance, Wrath of God, Eternal Dragon, Eternal Witness, the Cycle Lands from Onslaught. It was just super fun, and it drew a bunch of cards, just like one of my favorite things in Magic.
Yeah.
So, not even close. 100%.
If you've never heard of it, Astral Slide is a 3-mana enchantment that's white, and every time you cycle, you can blink a creature. Is it until end of turn, or is it instant blink?
It's until end of turn.
Okay.
Yeah, so
that's why the Wrath is good.
Exiles the creatures until end of turn, yeah. So, like, you would slide out your Eternal Witness, and then play Wrath of God.
Nice.
And get your Eternal Witness back, and get back your Wrath of God. And be like, all right, would you like to play more guys? And they would. And you slide out your Eternal Witness and play Wrath of God. It was only really good after Skullclamp got banned, though, however. But the deck was still super fun. So,
cool.
By far my favorite deck.
We'll have to remember to ask Nick that same question when he joins us. Because that's a good one. All right. Before we start, though, today, we do have a couple of announcements and things.
Go ahead.
So, this is the end of my summer, I have to say. I'm a teacher, so I'm going back to school next week. But during the summer, I was pretty active in generating some content, particularly on the website, not so much on the podcast, because we had a lot of things going on, so we missed a few weeks in there. But if you go to cardknocklifepodcast.com, you'll see what I mean. There's a lot of stuff that we've been posting lately, particularly the CKL Plays series, where we do, like, matchups with kind of, like, fun, basically in place of our juicy deck text that we would do on the cast. Some fun lists that we found online or lists that we generated. And Daryl's got an Esper Thopters list in Legacy where he plays that out a couple times. I had some issues with the resolution on it. I fixed it now. But I put it on Reddit, and all these people, like, were complaining about the resolution. And I screwed it up because it didn't transfer very well to a MP4 file. My bad. So I fixed it anyways. But most recently we got an Esper Geist Flare one up there. There's another one coming later this week.
Nice.
But basically the point of this is we're looking for help with that. If you're interested in writing content or making content, particularly writing articles about decks and about, you know, Standard, Modern, Legacy, or if you'd be interested in even doing a video like the CKL plays, let me know. And you can do that by emailing cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com. I'll put that in the show notes. But if you are thinking about submitting a writing sample or an article, please, please, please take some time to, like, check the spelling and, like, the grammar and stuff. I've gotten a lot of them that are people like, yeah, absolutely, I'll write an article. And it's like, the content is great, but they're just, like, all these incomplete sentences and just odd phrasing and things. And I have to do a lot of editing. I really don't have the time for that.
Ain't nobody got time for that. You could drop that nice little YouTube video right here.
Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time. Ain't nobody got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that.
Yeah. All right. So actually, let's see. I'm going to get started with some stuff, but before we do, we're going to take a quick break before we start my stuff because Nick is going to be joining us here. So pause for commercial interruption. All right. And we're back. Nick has joined us here. Nick, am I saying your name right if I say Kohler?
You're saying Nick right. Keller is incorrect. Keller. It's actually Keller with a silent O because, you know, the Germans and their silent O's.
All right, cool. I didn't know if you were, like, in charge of the Fawcett Empire in Wisconsin.
I'm actually second in command, so not in charge quite yet, but I'm working my way up.
You'll get there, man. You just have to kill a few people off.
Just one.
Just one. Oh, yeah, that's right. Just one. Sorry. I was listening.
That's all right.
What a jerk.
All right. Anyways, Nick, if you want to just say hi and, like, maybe just explain, like, what your focus is when it comes to playing cards and as far as format and what decks you like to play and stuff, that would be cool.
Sure. I mostly play Modern. I don't really have a deck I play too often. I was on a hot streak before. I played three PPTQs and topped eight, two of them with three different decks. So anything that's proactive. So I play aggro decks mostly. And if it's got Geistain Trapped in it, I love it more. So yeah. Burn, Infect, Geist, Five Color Zoo, whatever. I'll play it all as long as it's killing them on turn six or earlier.
Now, your Five Color Zoo is more like five color good stuff. I kind of ripped off your idea. We've talked about that on the cast a little bit, but...
Oh, did you? Cool. I'm popular already.
Yeah, well, see, after you beat me with that deck, I think I put it together in a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my own version of it, but it was definitely inspired by the one that you beat me with, so... Props to you for that. So I know Nick from Modern at Board Game Barrister in, is it in Milwaukee?
I don't know, somewhere outside Milwaukee. I don't know if it's in exactly Milwaukee, but I will say it's in Milwaukee.
It's in the United States.
Yes.
America. Part, no.
It's actually like one of the best places to play around here, despite the like low prize payout. It's just got a good big crowd, all sorts of cool, jolly people.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyways, Daryl gave us like a little trivia at the beginning of the cast here to kick things off, and it was, what is your favorite deck of all time?
Like, doesn't matter what format, playing it, watching it, favorite deck ever.
Favorite deck ever. I heard Andrew's was Pod, and I don't want to say Pod because that deck
that was mine.
I know. But, like, I beat you in a PTQ, so, like, it's fine. Or, no, you beat me that game. You beat me that game.
Oh,
that
did
was...
I win? Oh, yeah, good.
Yeah, because you did, like, I misplayed when you, like, Gavney Townshiped and then, like, Resto to, like, stop my, like, lifelink or something like that. And I was like, screwed. But I did, like, I played a Nyapod version where it was a Kiki Jiki pod without the blue. And I played, like, Tarmogoyf and Wild Nacatles. And, like, I was able to do a plan B. Beatdown plan, and I don't know. I had a lot of fun with that deck. I played that one for like a whole PPTQ or PPDQ season back then. So it was just like Brimaz's, Tarmogoyf, Kitchen Finks, Voice Resurgence, and then like three Restos, two Kiki. So I don't know.
Is that like Kiki Chord or something?
I played like one chord. I think I was on the Domri plan at that point, just for like value. Because, like, there wasn't too many, like, combo decks back then. Bloom Titan wasn't really a deck. Tron wasn't popular. So it was just mostly trying to beat the Jund decks of, you know, Kitchen Finks into Resto and just value them out through the rest of the game.
Yeah. There's a Jeff Hoogland Kiki Chord deck that we talked about last week. And I've been playing it a lot. I put it together in paper. It's pretty sweet. It's got Domri's in it and stuff. It sounds a lot like what you're talking about. But it's just, like, four Restos, two Kikis, four chords, and lots of walls.
Yeah, I played that version when he first made it like a month or two ago, whenever he like first made the first iteration of it. Mm-hmm. And it felt okay, but it felt also like really underpowered a lot of the times if you drew like all walls. And like that mm-hmm. deck really needs Quarter Calling to like function. If you don't draw Quarter Calling, you're drawing a really bad like deck that you see like an FNM player play. You're just like, oh, wall. Yep.
Yeah.
Like, so it's okay, but it really needs for a Quarter Calling to resolve. And in a heavy Grixis deck or heavy Grixis meta, I don't really want to play with a deck that revolves around, you know, resolving a like 10 mana instant to try to win the game.
Is there a lot of Grixis at Board Game Barrister? I haven't been there in a while.
It's not a Board Game Barrister, but whenever the past like three PPTQs I went to, it's about like, I would say like 40% Grixis, and then like 30% like Tron, Bloom, and then like 20% like aggro stuff.
Tron, Bloom.
Yeah, right. That's, it's gross.
Well, speaking of losing to one card at a time, Zendikar is coming out, and I think they've corrected the... there was a transition there. Did you catch that?
It was a terrible transition.
And I think they corrected the Annihilator situation on every single Eldrazi. That ability is just not fun to play against. It's so...
Yeah, they said they weren't bringing that back.
I think that, like, every time an Emrakul comes out against me, I just feel like there's nothing I can do against it. There are very few cards that can answer it, and, like, to include those cards in your sideboard, it takes up so much space in your 75, you know, for something that's so specific. But I'm like, I find myself playing Tribute to Hunger just because I hate that matchup so bad. And Tribute to Hunger is not good.
Yeah, it's not. Every time, like, someone casts an Emrakul, a small puppy dies. It's horrible.
I want Crackling Doom in every deck is what I want.
It's really good, man.
It is really good, but I can't play it in my Grixis deck, but I'm close. I could splash white for it.
Yeah, just splash white, and you might as well splash green, so you can glitter for it.
Yeah. Anyway, so in my stuff this week, I want to talk about the Battle for Zendikar spoilers, which we got a lot of information out of the dual decks. So there are a few new cards spoiled. Of course, we got the Eldrazi. I'm sure you've all seen them by now. But most importantly, what I want to talk about are the keyword mechanics that they've got included in this one. And I'm thinking that Ingest is the new Annihilator. It's only on one of the Eldrazis that they're showing, and that's the Dominator Drone. And if you haven't seen it, which, like I said, you probably have already, sorry. Ingest does... When a creature does combat damage to a player, that player exiles the top card of his or her library. So it seems really minimal. A lot of these creatures that they're showing here, or at least two of them, two of the Eldrazis, are three cost or less. So I'm thinking we're going to get a lot of like smaller Eldrazi drones in this set that kind of maybe support some of the bigger guys. Because the Oblivion Sour, he kind of benefits from the Ingest.
Yes, he does.
So that ability on the... this is the Dominator Drone. It doesn't really do anything for the Dominator Drone itself. In fact, it doesn't interact with the other ability, which is when it enters the battlefield, if you control another colorless creature, each opponent loses 2 life. So, other than the Oblivion Sower, we don't have a whole lot of information of why you'd want to Ingest, but I don't know what you guys think of that ability and like what can be done with it, but I'm sure that it's going to become one of those things where you're like, oh shit, I'm getting Ingested again.
Yeah, I'm sure there will be some spell that like is like cast a card that it was Ingested by your Eldrazi. Without paying its mana cost or something stupid like that.
Yeah.
Like,
well, without even that information yet, I think that a 3 for a 3/2 that saps 2 life when it comes into play is pretty decent, if not a good limited card.
No, not bad at all. The guy I'm more excited about is the one you're going to cut. Yeah, Forerunner Slaughtered.
Yeah, so the other one is an undercosted 3/2. It's a black and a red for a colorless creature. It's Devoid, which the borders on these look sweet as hell. They're awesome.
Yeah, I like them.
Some kind of tribal pattern on the top of them.
Yeah, huge fan.
Now, I'm thinking they only need to include Devoid when the creature has colored symbols in its mana cost, because the Oblivion Sower does not have Devoid, but it's just...
Correct. Oblivion Sower has no color because
It's already colorless, so you don't need to tell it it's colorless.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay, I suppose. So, like, the only information, if that wasn't there, would be the fact that the border is not solid.
Correct. And if it wasn't there, then it would be a colored spell because it doesn't say it's not.
Okay, right. Duh, I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, they don't say, you know, this is an artifact when it's an artifact.
Right. So that creature can also give a colorless creature haste for one mana, and that is an unlimited activation cost. It does not tap. So I think that that is, like, extremely good and limited, but probably constructive playable too, don't you think?
Oh, this dude's super constructive playable. Like, would you pay 3 mana for a 3/2 haste creature?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Maybe.
Did it. You also get the upside of, like, Ghostfire Blade being a thing in your deck, so you can, like, put a Ghostfire Blade on this guy and he's a 5/4.
You think Ghostfire Blade is going to be... Ghostfire Blade. I'm thinking of Ghostfire.
Oh, wait. Is that
Ghostfire Blade is going to be good, huh?
Is that
Card's not rotating. That card just...
No, it's in cons, yeah.
Oh, nice. I'm the best. I'm a genius. Yeah, Ghostfire Blade. Yeah. Ghostfire Blade, your guy. Like, people are specking on that. I saw somebody, like, on TCG, before these guys were spoiled, there were, like, 250 Ghostfire Blades. Now there are zero. Nice. Like, there might be some now, but somebody bought, like, all of the Ghostfire Blades at, like, a dollar or something.
Not to mention it's a pretty big part in the Thopter's deck, but the Thopter's deck is totally not going to exist after rotation.
Yeah, Thopter's deck dead.
I don't know. Anyways, what do you guys think of the Eldrazi's? Is this a better solution to the Annihilator, to the, like, the 15 mana, like, you win the game cards?
I mean, they haven't spoiled all of them yet, but, like, the three big Eldrazi's are the, you know, the ones that are already from Zendikar, so I don't know if they're going to get a reprint, because we just got a 6-mana Void thing.
Yeah.
Devoid. It's not, it doesn't have Devoid, but it's essentially Devoid. What I think a cool interaction was when you mentioned was the Devoid when Oblivion Sower. Oblivion Sower doesn't say, when it exiles, it doesn't say, like, put any lands from the top of the library, like, that was from this ability, like most other cards do. Like, if you, like, discard a creature card from the top three cards, or sorry, mill. But this one just says you can play any from exile. So if they, like, play Tassigar with a fetch land, you can play that. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, you're talking about Ingest, right?
Yeah.
Oh, he's talking about Oblivion Sower's ability.
Oh, sorry.
Like, well, you said Devoid, but you mean Ingest.
Sorry, I meant Ingest. Yes, that is correct.
The Ingest, it's like it only exiles one card, and it's when you connect with the Dominator Drone. So it's like you don't even really get that much value out of it unless it's actually getting through, and it's only got 2 toughness. So chances are it's going to get blocked and killed before you get even more than 1 out of it.
Right, yeah. But if there's, like, you know, better Eldrazi's that, like, well, can take advantage of the Ingest, because I'm sure that's what it's for. It's for to set up an Eldrazi that will be able to, you know, when this enters the battlefield, put all the creatures that are ingested from your opponent into play.
Right, right.
So, I mean, we've only seen one card that uses the exile zone, and it seems okay at best, but it's a 6 mana. But if we can see a huge, you know, 10 mana... 10/10 that ingests creatures to the battlefield would be pretty cool.
Right, right.
So
yeah, I'm sure there's going to be more that takes advantage of ingest, you know.
Correct. I'm sure there is. If there's only been one card spoiled with ingest, I'm sure there might be at least one more card with ingest.
Yeah, so we don't have all the information, obviously.
Correct.
But hey, now's the time to get your Tauren Elementals, right? You know, that guy can be played from exile for 5.
Ooh.
That's a major card advantage.
Okay.
There are going to be 4 in every green, blue, or green.
Okay, we're done here.
Mono Blue Devotion's back on the map, huh?
Yeah,
we're done here. Ship it.
Alright, anyways, beyond that, there's another new keyword mechanic that is Awaken. And this is really wonky the way this is worded, but I don't think there's any better way to do it. So, Sheer Drop is a 2/1 white sorcery that destroys target tapped creature, which on its own is not bad. Definitely good in Limited.
Yeah,
it can awaken 3. If you cast a spell for 5/1 white, also put 3+1/+1 counters on target land you control, and it becomes a 0/1 elemental creature with haste. It's still a land.
0/0.
What did I say?
You said 0/1.
Oh, 0/0. Sorry. Yeah, so is it the wording, like, backwards on that? Oh, no, it has to have the counters on before it becomes a creature. Otherwise, it just dies first, right?
That is correct.
Okay. And it gets haste, just in case you accidentally targeted the land you played this turn, which would be wrong. You're okay, because it has haste, right?
Well, I mean, it gives you the upside of, like, play a fetch land, make it a 3/3, attack you.
Yeah, but we're not going to get like fetch that. Lands.
It's really weird.
Cons. Cons still has fetch lands.
Okay.
Yeah. I really don't like how it's worded, though. It's really, like, awaken 3/5 white. That just seems...
Right. Doesn't, like, can't it just become a 3/3?
I mean, that's the templating that they have for all these other counter-based cards, like Graft. Graft is the same thing here. It has, like, Graft 3. except they just don't have a mana cost with Graft. Same. This is the same templating for Suspend.
Well, yeah. This is so you can harden scales and into a 4/4.
Got him, boys. Just,
sorry, yeah. Go ahead, Nick.
I think they should just be like a kicker card. Like it's maybe not use exactly kicker, but like it seems like it should be like worded like kicker.
Yeah, no shit. It really is just kicker, isn't it?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of things that are just kicker, but like, I don't know. It just seems weird to me that it's got like two alternate casting costs because then it's confusing. Like, is it a 6-mana CMC card then, or is it a 3-mana CMC card?
It's always a 3-mana CMC card. Like the mana cost in the top corner is always what the CMC is. Like, doesn't matter.
Okay. All right, yeah, so I'm thinking that Awaken's always going to have to do with making a land a creature, because that's kind of the theme of Zendikar.
Land's better, yeah.
Awaken 3, yeah.
Oh, that could be done. You know what? That could be done to a man land. This tells me that we might have man lands, right? What is that? How does that work with a man land?
It becomes so a man lands.
So it always becomes a 3. It's always a 3/3. And then when you activate it, it becomes whatever it is.
Ooh, and then plus one counters.
Well, plus the plus one counters. But then when the end of turn effect goes away, it's still a 3/3.
Okay. All right. What did you say, Nick? Sorry.
I don't know what I was saying. But yes, it works the way with man lands that it's going to always be a man land, but it's also going to get the buff when you activate the man land.
Okay. So not suggesting that you do this, but Creeping Tar Pit attacks for 6.
Not bad.
Unlockable.
It also dies the bolt every single time. Like, every chance it dies the bolt unless you have, like, 4 mana up.
That's true.
To activate after. Even at end of turn, they can just do it on the cleanup skills. So, I don't know. It seems okay. It's a cool ability, but I think because of this, I don't think we're going to see actual man lands, because I think this is their interpretation of man lands for at least this set. I think maybe Battle for Zendikar 2 we might see actual man lands again, but I don't even know if that's going to be the case.
Right. Well, I mean, so Merrill confirmed no duels, right? This is old news, but he also said that there is a new cycle of lands that is completely new design. So I wouldn't consider man lands or lands to become creatures any sort of new design, but there isn't a whole lot left design space for lands that are... And he didn't even say two colors, did he?
Did he say not duels? I thought he just said not like anything they've done before.
Yeah, that was basically it. Okay. So, could it be a tri-land? We haven't had any rare tri-lands for a while. Like, Murmuring Bosque was, like, one I can think of, but...
Yeah.
You know, like, that's something that we just haven't visited. I don't know what would be balanced for a tri-land that could, like, even come into play untapped, you know?
Take 4?
Is it? Yeah, you think? That seems, like, maybe. Unplayable.
It does seem unplayable. 3?
Is 3 fair? Is that balanced?
I mean, it can't have the subtypes then. It can't have Forest Island if it's a tri-land. So wait, maybe...
I don't know.
It'd be way too powerful for Modern if you had a tri-land.
Yeah, well, I think maybe even if it... Okay, so if it didn't and you shocked for 3, that adds up quick. That's a lot of damage to be paying, or a lot of life to be paying. So I don't know.
Or they have a draw card or something like that. Right. It's got to be a sizable amount of downside that's more than 2 damage from Shocklands, and I don't know. A Tri-Land seems too good.
So I don't know if any of the future site, like the future shifted cards, the land cycle that they had, if any of those would qualify as unexplored space because they've already done them in future site, but there's still some of those cycles that we haven't visited yet, like the blue-white one that taps for blue, like if you have a white source, or taps for white if you have a blue source.
Right.
Or Grove of the Burn Willows we haven't got. Green white, what's the green white one called?
Sun Petal
like
Grove?
$40.
That one.
Future site.
Horizon Canopy.
Horizon Canopy. Yeah, that we need those.
Those would be good.
Probably not gonna happen.
It could be something like if they're like maybe like Eldrazi like land monuments or something like that. Maybe it's like if you control a colorless creature, it comes to play untapped. Maybe. That seems weird, but maybe that could be a thing if they really want to push like Eldrazi being like the key to the set.
Could be. I don't know. Well, we could spec on this all day, but by the time we actually get this podcast posted, it'll probably be public knowledge. So
figured it out.
All right. Well, those are our guesses. I'm saying it's a 3-colored land. It doesn't really make sense with the design of this set, but hey, why not? Anyways, the only other thing I want to say about this before we go on is that there is an ally spoiled, and you all suspected that there would be allies in Battle for Zendikar, but There are. Hey, confirmed now. And I think that the reason this is significant is because we talked about that ally deck in Modern. Not to say that this is, like, going to be a tier 1, tier 2 deck, but I've seen that deck played on online a lot.
Is that and the 5-color one?
It is 3-color. It's Naya Allies, and it plays, like, Aether Vials and stuff. It's extremely powerful. It's very, very strong.
And you play, like, Soldier of the Pantheon? Not Soldier of the Pantheon.
Plays Haribaz Druid, which is a 0/1 that gets bigger every time you play an ally. It plays Kazandu Blademaster, which gets bigger. It's okay. Basically got all allies in it.
And then Champion of the Parish. That's the card I was thinking of.
No, that's correct? A human.
Yeah, but it's still all allies.
All the allies are humans.
That's true. Yeah. That could be good in there. The deck, I haven't seen a list that has that because you need to play an ally to trigger the other ally abilities. So
yeah.
The Haribaz Druid is like the better version of that for that deck.
You mean Hada Freeblade?
Hada Freeblade. Yes. I'm thinking Druid's the
mana ramp.
Yeah. Anyways, so I bought a bunch of allies online because I think if it's not a Modern deck, it's definitely going to be an EDH build. And so if you're paying like 25 cents for any of these rare allies, they're going to be worth at least a buck.
Deck is sweet.
Anyways, think about it. That's all I got for the Battle for Zendikar spoilers.
Not really much there. Landfall is back.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, there's not much, but at the same time, it says a lot about like what we're going to see in the set.
Yeah, they gave us a lot of hints towards the direction that Battle for Zendikar is going, which is sort of, you know, we're going to bring back Landfall, so lands are still going to matter. Awaken makes lands matter even more. And then we're going to kind of like give you this weird Eldrazi tilt with Devoid. But so it's basically, basically they actually came to the point where they dealt with something that was that was in Future Sight, which was Ghostfire. They basically gave it a mechanic, called it Devoid. So kind of Ghostfire from that Future Sight set has come to fruition. So that's kind of cool to see.
Yeah, totally. I agree. Sorry. I don't have much to say to tag on that, but I was just afraid of just dead space there. I can't handle it.
It's fine.
Anyways, one last thing before we hand it over to Daryl. Daryl's just going to, like, blast Vintage knowledge on you.
Legacy, Vintage, yeah. It's...
So before we go there, though, let's stick in Standard for a few more minutes here because we've got a rotation coming up in 1 month, and the 7 cards on the spoiler, or 6 cards on the spoiler don't really tell us much information about Battle for Zendikar, but we do have all the information about Khans of Tarkir. Some people hate this sort of conversation because you can never speculate as to what the metagame is going to look like after rotation without more of the set spoiled, but what we do know is we know which cards are powerful in Khans. And we have ideas of which cards can be powerful if the metagame were different. And we know what we're going to lose, too. So I wanted to see what you guys thought, maybe open up for discussion here on, like, once that rotation happens, in October, by the way, October 2nd is when Battle for Zendikar comes out, having lost, you know, Thoughtseize, Goblin Rabble Master, Elspeth,
Stormbreath
Dragon, lots and lots of stuff that are huge players, Temple.
Get it out of here.
Or Skylands, I should say. What cards might rise to the top from Khans? I've got my ideas. I want to see what you think first.
I have a vote, and I'm going to make a bold prediction right now. Hold on, go ahead, somebody else go, and I'll make my bold prediction after I look up how much this card costs.
Okay, Nick, you got any ideas?
I don't follow Standard a whole lot. I play it every now and then whenever I can borrow a deck. But I think Mono Red is going to be very good after rotation.
Okay.
Not just because people are sorting out and trying to figure out the format like it is every rotation. But it's losing. It's Courser of Krufix is going out of the format, which is a huge butt and life gain, which is something aggro decks don't want to see all the time. They also got a lot of like the dash creatures that just came out and... They got a lot of good weapons, and then what's that 2/1 Dark Confidant in red that just came out?
Blood Artist. Oh, in red?
In red.
Abbot of Carol Keep.
Oh, right.
That's him. Yeah, he seems like a really good player, so yeah. I think Mono Red's going to be very good for a while going into at least, you know, the few first weeks of rotation like it always is, but I think it's going to be another contender.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. I mean, having piloted the Mono Red deck in Standard for a while, like, I can say that Courser is a huge problem for that deck. That life gain adds up, and you have to prioritize killing it immediately, and that means your 4 damage to the face is now directed at a creature, too, and those are your finishers.
We're losing Stoke, though, right?
Stoke's plan's going away? We've got Exquisite Firecraft still.
That's true, yep.
So it's like roast.
There's an article out there about, and roast. There's an article that kind of goes into the standard decks right now, and it says it grades the decks based on which ones are going to survive rotation best. And decks like blue-red artifacts, like you already mentioned, like it's going to be losing in Soul Artifact, which like the deck basically can't function without. Abzan, like control and mid-range, is in decent shape. It loses its temples, which is pretty big for it. And it loses, what else?
Elspeth.
Elspeth and Courser and...
Downfall.
I think Abzan's going to be around for a while, which pains me to say because I'm just so sick of like everything being green, black, white right now in standard.
How do you not want a Dr. Siegeman then?
But, like, yeah, Dr. Siegeman. Well,
I don't think it's going to be that good anymore because it's losing so much. It loses Thoughtseize, Courser, Elspeth. Like, shell is just going to be, what, Abzan Charm and Siege Rhino plus, like...
Tassigar.
Well, it's got your Mocha's
Ultimate
Command.
Prize, Mocha's Command.
Okay. And Johnny's.
Like, so something I kind of want... Johnny will be removed.
And now Hangerback, too, is in the deck.
Hangerback, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Like, something I kind of expect to see an uptick in, and people, you're going to laugh at me. This is not my bold prediction, but I expect to see an uptick in Palace Siege.
Okay.
Because I think that Siege is very underplayed, and just, like, having this, like, drain two every turn, or, like, pick up my Siege Rhino, pick up my Tassigar, pick up my Dragon Lord Dromoka, you know, pick up my Whisperwood Elemental, my Den Protector, my Deathless Raptor, and just, like, grind your opponent out of the game with Palace Siege seems like a very real thing.
Yeah, I get you.
That's a sideboard-only card, though, yeah? You're not going to have that in the main deck.
No, you play it as, like, your grind engine. Like, your Whip of Erebos, it's just a Palace Siege.
Huh.
Okay.
Okay, so Palace Siege, return a creature from a graveyard to your hand at the beginning of upkeep,
or drain the
2 life and you gain 2. It costs 5, though. That's pretty intense.
Right, and it doesn't do anything to turn it thumbs down.
Certainly.
Like, I know.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying, like, it's, like, lay nut, but, like, you would play one or two of it. It's just like a Whip of Arrows. Like, you would play one or two, and it would be this, like, long game grind engine. You would pick up your Siege Rhinos, or you would pick up your Dead Protectors, and you would just start this loop that, if your opponent doesn't have a Dromoka's Command to answer, is just going to grind your opponent into oblivion.
Okay. Sounds legit.
So,
you got another one, Daryl?
I got the bold prediction.
Okay, what's that?
My bold prediction is that...
I thought Palace Siege was your bold prediction.
No, that's not my bold prediction. I just think that's right. A card.
Okay.
My bold prediction is that Explosive Vegetation in 6 months will be... It is currently a 14-cent card on TCG Player. I predict that it will be a $1 card. Because I think that card is...
Cents.
No, $1.
Okay,
Because, like, the card was super, super powerful in Onslaught.
Yeah.
And... in Onslaught Standard, like, Goblins was super powerful. But, like, the other deck was, like, a green-red Dragons deck, where you played Explosive Vegetation into Kiln Fiend Dragon, or Kiln Mouth Dragon, and Dragon Tyrant, and Dragon Mage. Well, guess what? We have Explosive Vegetation and Dragons again. I wonder what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, there will be a Dragons ramp deck, where you just, it'll be Naya Dragons, or it could be, like, Jund Dragons. I don't know, like, what direction people will take it in. Naya seems to be the most obvious, because the Tarka and Dromoka feel like the two most powerful Dragon Lords in that shell.
Mm-hmm.
There will be a Dragon's deck, I think. And I think it will cause Explosive Vegetation to be an offer.
Alright. I can see it. Up to, like, Dragon Lord of Tarka or something?
Dragon Lord of Tarka. So, if you play Explosive Vegetation on 4... You can play Dragon Lord of Tarka on 5 if you hit your land drop, or Dromoka on 5 if you don't. So,
yeah,
like, given an appropriate amount of fat things to play in your deck, you can have, like, appropriate locations on the curve for them. You can balance that out. You can even play, like, a Teemer Dragons deck that played Sarkhan Unbroken. Like, there's sort of a bunch of different directions you can go. But I think your base green, probably base red-green, because Dragon Lord of Tarka is just... super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd figure out what you want your third color to be.
Alright. So I agree with Nick on this one. I think I've had this conversation like over Reddit before, and whenever like I try to initiate that, there's so many people that just like shoot it down. They're like, man, this isn't even worth talking about. We don't have the information from the next set. And like, yeah, well, I get that. Like I said, there's stuff you know about what you have, and we know that the first weekend of the new standard ends up being like 80%, even 90% cards that were already in the rotation with us like a smattering of like stuff that people are trying from the new set, right?
Usually it's like one or two cards that make the decks like week one. Either A, people are looking for the cards, or like B, like you just don't know what the format's going to look like, so you're going to pick the cards you know what they do, how they interact, and build a deck around that.
And so you talk about Burn, and like Burn is going to survive the rotation really well. It's going to be losing its Stokes. It's going to be losing, what else? There's one more pretty big player in there.
Rabblemaster.
Rabblemaster isn't in the Burn decks right now.
Lightning Strike?
Lightning Strike is, I think that's still around, isn't it?
No, I think it's from Theros. I don't know if they didn't reprint it. Wild Strike is the closest thing to it.
Okay.
Wild Slash, yeah.
Without Lightning Strike, I suppose. Yeah, Theros, M15.
Eidolon of the Great Rebel.
Eidolon, that's right. That's the Yeah, so that can be replaced. We'll find some, like, we're definitely going to get an efficient red card in this new set, because they always print those, right? Like,
yeah, I don't think you're going to get place.
We can find something in M15.
I don't think you're going to get something in Eidolon good, but I think you'll get something. You might get Goblin Guide.
That's what people are thinking. Goblin Guide would be, I think he'd be too good.
Terrifying?
For standard.
Way too good.
I don't see why we think that we're going to get reprints of cards from the original set in this set. Has that ever happened before? Like in Ravnica? Did we get anything in Ravnica?
Shocklands.
Yeah. Game. Well,
Shocklands.
All right, fine.
Game.
That was it, right?
Perfect. That's all we needed. Like, who cares?
I know, but it's just like, it's a long shot, you know? Like, Shocklands are pretty standard because that's like the terrain on which it exists. But if you have a sequel to a movie, do the characters do the same shit in those movies?
I mean,
they have new enemies. They have new experiences. They're different. They change. Like, in order for you to advance your story, you've got to, like, have new shit in you.
Like, characteristics that, like, you know, Johnny Cage is a cocky guy in all the Mortal Kombat movies. It's not like one day he just becomes humble. He just is cocky in a different way in every movie. It's like Goblin Guy is what people see now as like a part of the character of Zendikar along with Fetchlands. I don't think you'll see Fetchlands because Mara said you're not. But I think Goblin Guy at some point could be a thing you see. Because it's a generic enough card that you could get away with reprinting.
I'm financially interested in it not being reprinted because I know it'll go up if it doesn't get reprinted. Probably that card will max out at about $40 right now. But
you have Goblin Guides?
I do. I bought them when Rabblemaster was spoiled because I was ready for the modern Goblins. Ooh. But they've gone up a couple bucks since I bought them. I didn't lose.
Yeah, well, I mean, you will lose if it gets reprinted.
Yeah, I know it. But
plus they have the GP art to use. They have the sweet GP art.
They do. Like, yeah. That one's like $50.
I got my playset of those, bought those when Wild Mikado was unbanned, so I got them at $6, so...
Oh, God.
I'm okay
game.
With...
Game! Yeah.
Yeah, that card's been steadily increasing. It's a pretty big player in Legacy and Modern, so I think it's gonna... I mean, it's not going down.
No, right.
Anyways, that's a long story short. I think that Burn's gonna be good in Standard 2, and not because of the argument that everyone's gonna make that is... Burn's always good in the first weekend. Yeah, duh, obviously it is. We don't need that. I think the deck is suppressed by the life gain that's going on in Standard right now, and a lot of that life gain is going to leave, with the exception of Siege Rhino.
Right.
The main offender is the Courser, just like you said, Nick.
Yeah.
So I would predict that Hangerback Walker is going to be really good because the card is just like super efficient and it's an artifact.
That guy's gas. He is insane.
Mark Nesico drew parallels, and he wrote an article, and he's like, it's a bold claim, but other standard formats have been oppressed by artifacts, and he like shows Aether Vial, Skull Clamp.
Skull Clamp.
Yeah.
Don't remind me of Skull Clamp, please.
Well,
it gives me nightmares.
Maybe Hangerback Walker will. I don't know.
No.
I mean, the
card's
just good in like almost every shell that it's played in right now. So.
Yep.
There are lots of +1/+1 counter shenanigans too. So. Dromoka's Command and Hangerback Walker. I didn't realize that interaction until last weekend, and I was like, oh my god, that's crazy. That's really good. Put a counter on him, fight.
Counter, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyways, you guys got any more comments to make on this before we go on to the scary world of Vintage?
I'm good here.
All right, Daryl, can you explain Vintage to us before you talk about it? Because
I'm going to explain why we're going off into the deep end of Magic's history.
All right, do it.
Before I get to Vintage, and then I'll explain Vintage, and then I'll talk about decks.
Go.
So this weekend, for those of you who don't know, is Eternal Weekend. It's a two-day tournament weekend in Philadelphia with tournaments for Legacy and Vintage. So Saturday, I'm going to play in Legacy. I'm trying to get a set of power so I can play in Vintage. I don't know if I can find a set, and if not, I will probably hang out on Sunday and watch insane Vintage action and try and see if I can hustle my way into some power. But these things are marqueed by the winner getting like about $2,000-ish in credit from the vendor, and then a sweet original print art of a Legacy staple. So this year's prints are Mox Pearl for the Vintage, and Tundra for the – or no, it's Mox Emerald for the Vintage, and Tundra for the Legacy champion. It's basically like the trophy. But it's a super cool weekend. Tons and tons and tons of like old school players in one place. Crazy pimped out decks. Like tons of fun to be had. If you're into Legacy or Vintage, fantastic. If you're not, there's going to be a ton of content to watch online to try and kind of like learn about the formats. It's great. So I'm super hyped for that.
Nice.
And I've been testing with the guys here in Baltimore for the Vintage tournament on Sunday because, you know, this place has a large Legacy scene and a reasonable Vintage scene because a lot of the power in America is on the East Coast. So I've been testing with these guys because they all have Vintage decks. And so I've been like the proxy gauntlet. And Vintage is a really sweet format. So it's essentially name a card. It's probably legal unless it's like an anti-card. Or a scheme, or
Cheaty Face.
unglued cards, and then like the conspiracy, like the actual conspiracies, like the like ones that like start the game outside of the game and do a thing. Those cards, not legal.
Yeah, what you'd expect, but, right?
Yeah, it's because they're just so different. But what kind of marquees Vintage is that there is no banned cards other than those weird cards that don't make any sense to have in the game. But there are restricted cards. So cards that you can only play one of in your 75. And they're pretty much just like name a super powerful card in Magic, probably on the restricted list. Ancestral Recall, Black Lotus, Brainstorm. I'm not going to go down the whole list, but I'll just name cards. All the Moxen, Time Vault. But there are also some like weird ones that like are recent cards. You go, really? That made it on the list? Ponder, Treasure Cruise. Trinisphere. So, I mean, like, okay. You kind of get thirst for knowledge. You kind of get the best of both worlds, but you just get to play all of the most powerful cards in Magic history in a deck, and you get to pretty much do anything. Like, you want to play a strategy, put some power in it, and let it rip and see what happens.
Yeah, you got an extra, like, $14,000 lying around, put some power in it, let it rip.
You can obviously play these decks on Modo. Power not super expensive. You can play these decks on Common Price.
Yeah, that's true.
You can proxy love playing with your friends. Like, the format is super fun. Like, so there is a barrier to entry in playing these, like, real events. But that's what, like, really large Magic communities are for. Try and find a large Magic community that someone that will trust you with power. You go to one of these crazy events. On the East Coast, they have the New York Stock Exchange Vintage Open. That's like a 15 proxy Vintage tournament for power. So, like, first place gets a Lotus, second place gets a Sapphire, third place gets a Recall, fourth place gets a Time Walk. And they give away 8 pieces of power, Mishra's Workshops, Time Vault, you know, Library of Alexandria. Just, like, the super expensive cards that are just Vintage. The cards that are sort of the staples. And so that's kind of neat. But, like, you see all sorts of things. There are sort of 4 different pillars of Vintage. There's Dredge, kind of championed by Bazaar of Baghdad, which for those of you who don't know, it's a land. Tap it, draw 2 cards, discard 3 cards. That's the effect. So as you would imagine,
That's draw bad. That's card disadvantage.
Card's terrible. But you're playing dredge, so you're like, oh, I'll draw two, and I'll discard three dredgers. Untap.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Tap it. Dredge 12. Discard my guys. Draw for turn. Dredge 6. And if you... The deck even plays Dread Return for Fate Stitcher to untap Bazaar Baghdad.
Oh, nice, yeah.
Tap your Bazaar, do it again. The deck plays Serum Powder because, like, sort of Bazaar Baghdad in that deck is just so powerful that if your hand doesn't have Bazaar, you don't care. Ship it, find Bazaar. Like, there are hands that you can play that don't have Bazaar, but the power level between the two decks is just so wild. Between the deck is, like, so wildly different between Bazaar and no Bazaar.
And when you play that deck, you just put on repeat that song that was on the radio in, like, 1998.
I
know which one I'm talking about. How
no.
Bizarre. How Bizarre.
Oh, God.
On repeat. Yeah.
Oh, God. It hurts.
I didn't know that those are the words, but yeah.
Yeah. I thought for the longest time it was Help is on. Help is on. But that didn't make any sense.
No, please, yeah. Well, I mean.
But that's sort of the first big deck. The second big deck is Workshops. So that's basically Mishra's Workshop. Tap, make 3 mana for an artifact spell, only for artifact spells. It's not a legendary land, so you can play 4 of this card. And so Trinisphere is restricted because this card exists, because you can play a turn 1 Mishra's Workshop, play a Trinisphere, and your opponent gets to not play a Moxen, not play a Sol Ring, not play a Black Lotus. And so many vintage decks only play, like, 16 lands. So it's just so hard for you to, against Wasteland and Strip Mine, get to 3 lands to cast your spell. So they had to restrict Trinisphere. But yeah, the Workshop deck is just like Chalice of the Void, Thorn of Amethyst, Trinisphere.
What was that? Thorn of what?
Thorn of Amethyst. It's a 2-mana artifact.
Yeah.
Non-creature spells cost 1 more to cast.
Oh, okay.
Sphere of Resistance is a 2-mana artifact. All spells cost 1 more to cast.
Tax.
So you'll... Yeah, so it's just taxing, yeah. So you'll see these things kind of ferried about in various ways. There are a bunch of different versions of Workshop. There's, you know, called Alpha Forge Master. There's some new ones playing Hangerback Walker. There's Oh, yeah, it's terrifying. You have a 3-mana land for Hangerback Walker.
I thought it was because he didn't have his... whatever the other ones are. Because I thought it was just like, oh, I got my standard deck and I put these in here on accident. So
no,
I didn't
know
they were actually playing it.
No, they're actively playing Hangerback Walker on purpose. Like,
oh, all right.
Yeah, Hangerback, because like you have this land that makes 3 mana, so you play two workshops, you have a 3/3 Hangerback Walker. Hmm. And there's so few Swords to Plowshares running around in Vintage. There's like most people have like 1 or 2 in their deck, and maybe 1 in their sideboard. So like you have a 3/3 that's impossible to kill. Okay, sweet, got 3/1 ones, and I didn't have a Chalice on one when you played your Lightning Bolt. Cool. Alright. But yeah, so there's like the workshops with Forge Master, there's Hangerback Walker Workshop, there's Terra Nova is what they call it, which is like manlands based workshop. So there's like a bunch of different ways to play Workshop. But it's like the tax deck. So that's where Stacks originally came from. Originally Workshop played Smokestack. That's sort of where the genesis of that deck came from. So
sweet. So hey, yeah. how Hangerback Walker, are there other cards from like the current blocks that are in Standard that are played in Vintage? I think I've seen Monastery Mentor before, right?
So I've seen cards of all kinds of various varieties. I've seen Aetherling played in Vintage. I've seen Dragonlord Dromoka, Dragonlord Ojutai, Narset Transcendent, the aforementioned Monastery Mentor, Dig Through Time and Treasure Cruise, obviously. No Tibbles. Tassiger's made it. Just all sorts of different cards. I've seen a Splinter Twin deck in Vintage.
Not really.
Yeah, so like, wow. There are all sorts of crazy, interesting decks. Like, do you guys remember the Blue Moon deck from Legacy or from Modern that was just like Islands and Blood Moon? And that's what I'm doing. There's a Blue Moon deck in Vintage.
Nice. Do those gorillas that the Mox Monkeys, what are those guys called?
Gorilla Shaman?
Yeah, do those guys get played still, or is that not a thing people doing?
Not as much anymore, but they see play occasionally. But yeah, let's see. Other cards that are like Modern or Standard legal, there's Kuranos. There's someone that was just like playing a straight-up stone, like Clawblade deck. Like literally four Squadron Hawk, four Stoneforge Mystic, Swords and Batterskull, Clawblade.
Nice.
Like, but this format is also the reason Dak Faden is Infinity Dollars.
Is he? How much is he?
He's like $40.
What? Really? I thought it was like $15.
Let's check. No, that. He's like $40.
All right. He's a cool card.
Yeah. So this format. Yeah, this format is why Dak Faden is Infinite Dollars, because like it's actually the best card in the format. Dak Faden, take your Time Vault, go. And so if you ever draw your Voltaiki or a Tesserit, you know, you can't lose the game. That's one of the many combos I'll get to.
I heard someone make the argument that Hyxus Prison Warden, that's in the latest con set, was a vintage card.
I have no clue what that card does.
It is 5 mana for 4/4 flash, and when a creature deals combat damage to you, if Hyxus Prison Warden entered the battlefield this turn, exile that creature until it leaves the battlefield.
Not great.
Do you have any idea why that would be?
So you can easily get to 5 mana.
Yeah.
It's not that hard. And it's a board wipe against, like, Pyromancer and Mentor.
Yeah.
So you can, like, let them get through for, like, 6 or 7 if they don't have, like, if they don't go just, like, Mox, Prowess, attack you for 1,000,000. You know, if it's just, like, Pyromancer and they have, like, 4 guys, they attack you. You take 6, you play Hyxus, it exiles other things, it kills other tokens, you exile their Pyromancer. And you have a 4/4, which is resilient in, like a 4/4, 5 mana spell. Yeah. Really hard to kill.
Alright, well.
Shocking. So, I mean, like, that's an available option. Yeah, like, some things are just really randomly powerful. Like, that's just what it is.
Yeah.
But, so there's kind of 2 more big archetypes in Vintage. And it's sort of combo. I'm going to be super generic because there's a bunch of different combos. Combo and control.
Okay.
So, from combo, you'll see anything from Storm to Oath of Druids, which for those of you who don't know is a 2-mana enchantment, 1 and a green. If target player has more creatures than you, reveal the top card of your library, and so you hit a creature card, put that creature into play. So Oath of Druids will put into play Dragonlord Jamoka. That's the weakest thing I've seen put into play. Emrakul.
That seems like the worst one. It's usually Gristlebrand, yeah?
Yeah, Gristlebrand, Emrakul, Blightsteel Colossus. So Jamoka was played in a combo deck so that you could Oath into Dragonlord Jamoka so your opponent couldn't cast Force of Will or Mental Misstep and then kill them with a combo. So that was sort of the thought behind that version of the deck.
Okay.
Oath of Druids is a combo. There's the World Order Dragon. There's Storm. There's just all kinds of crazy different combos that you can play. Like, I could spend an entire 2-hour podcast getting down to the nuances of, like, every version of Storm and every version of Oath and every version of Reanimator, and like you could just plow through the spectrum of things. There's, you know, sort of combo control decks that fall in the middle, and there's control decks, and the control decks will play mostly kind of their flagship card is Mana Drain. Right. 2-mana counter spell, blue counter target spell, get X colorless on your next main phase.
Why wouldn't you play that?
Yeah, card's really good. So you'll see the control decks will have Mana Drain as sort of their premier counter spell to go with Force of Will and Mental Misstep. You know, they'll play all Power, Recall, stuff like that. But you'll see Jace the Mind Sculptor, Dak Faden. There's, you know, the combo control decks like Bomberman that play Oriok Salvagers plus Black Lotus, which makes infinite mana. And then if you have a Nihil Spellbomb, you can draw your whole deck and do Vintage things. They'll play Tinker, which 3-mana, sacrifice an artifact as part of the cost. Search your deck for an artifact, put it into play. They'll Tinker for Blightsteel Colossus and attack you with an 11/11 poison. There's always Time Vault Voltaiki. Time Vault is a 2-mana artifact, comes to play tapped. Skip your next turn to untap it, and then it has the ability tap, take an extra turn. So when you combine it with Voltaiki, which is a 1-mana artifact, pay 1, tap it, untap an artifact, you can take the rest of the turns with Time Vault Voltaiki and kill them at your leisure. So the Time Vault Voltaiki combo is kind of comedic when your opponent has Mana Crypt, because then they can lose Mana Crypt coin flips, take 3 damage, and kill themselves. So they have to figure out a way to beat their Mana Crypt. So that's kind of a neat, like, anti-synergy that people will play through the game if they have Mana Crypt to play, or just concede. Tezzeret the Seeker is often seen as a 1-of in this format, just because Tezzeret fetches your Time Vault, and then the plus ability untaps it. But Dak Faden stealing artifacts is one of the more powerful planeswalkers. And then you'll see a litany of the different creatures, whether it be Delver of Secrets, Young Pyromancer, Snapcaster Mage, Dark Confidant. You know, just the hits from Magic's history. Just coming through and doing all sorts of damage to people.
Go ahead. It seems like contrary to like Legacy, where you're playing with like all sorts of very powerful cards, like mana is not so much an option in Vintage, because you can play Mox and you can cheat like so much mana and to play with like Voltaic Key, Untap Mana Rock,
Untap Soul Ring, you end up
with like all sorts of like EDH cards that get played, which is pretty crazy, pretty fun.
Yeah, so like the big theory, like the big thing besides like the cost of like power, obviously, like the reason people don't like proxy Vintage and just play Vintage for fun is that they say, oh, Vintage just die on turn one all the time. Well, that's not necessarily true, because you know, Force of Will and Mental Misstep will bounce off of Time Walk or Recall or Jace or Time Vault or Yawgmoth's Will. And so like all the powerful cards just kind of like bounce off of each other, and then it's eventually just like, who's mana lined up to do a random big thing?
Is that right?
Yeah.
So it's kind of
like sometimes if your opponent just doesn't have it, then they're dead to your Tinker and the Bloodsteel Colossus. Like, gotcha. Yeah. But like sometimes if they do have it, you know, your Tinker gets countered, and like then like they misstep your Recall, you misstep their Recall, and so it's like, who draws the Yawgmoth's Will? Or who draws like their one Jace the Mind Sculptor or their one Tezzeret? And so like it's like, since there's so many one-ups in the decks, because, you know, Mystical Tutor, Vampiric Tutor, Demonic Tutor, all these cards are super powerful, but they're restricted. There's a ton of one-ups in your decks. And so it's almost like playing in EDH. You'll play, like, four Force of Will, and then, like, three Dictor Time or something, if that's what your deck's doing. But, like, the blue decks look very much like EDHs. Yeah. And then the Workshop decks and the Dredge decks look very much like decks you'd expect a Constructed deck look like. 4-4-4-4-4-4, most powerful restricted cards, you know, a few extra lands, and your blue decks will just be all over the map with, like, sideboard cards and crazy weird things. So it's not just a format of dead on turn.
So, Daryl, is what you're going to do here basically a juicy Vintage deck tech?
I basically did a juicy Vintage tech there, kind of just giving sort of the opening for, you know, this is what the format is. It's actually really sweet, plugging it. I'm going to see if I can get a deck to play in it. I'm going to try and find, I will do a juicy Vintage deck tech.
Yeah, pick one, man. You got a lot of lists in here. We got
to
hear about
it. I have to find the one that I think, because you asked about new cards.
Yeah.
You know, what are new cards in Vintage?
Yep.
One of these decks, and excuse me, it's going to take me a minute because I put like 10 or 11 decks in here.
I've got a few pulled up.
All right, I found it.
Okay.
I found a Grixis Wizards deck. This deck has Jace Vryn's Prodigy in it.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Nice.
All right, so Jace Vryn's Prodigy has a ton of synergy in Vintage with Gifts Ungiven. You dump cards into your graveyard. So you'll go through cards very quickly, because you have a bunch of one mana spells and cheap spells. You'll dump cards in your graveyard very quickly, and so you'll easily flip Jace Vryn's Prodigy. Well, Jace Vryn's Prodigy's backside, its power goes up infinity when the cards you're flashing back are Time Walk, Ancestral Recall, Dig Through Time, you know, Thirst for Knowledge, you know, these sorts of cards, Treasure Cruise.
That's an infinite turn combo with just Time Walk and him, yeah?
No, it's not, because it exiles. It's flashback.
Oh, does it exile?
Yeah, it exiles the Time Walk. Not that good.
Okay.
Oh, boy. That would be terrifyingly good. But this is more of an aggro sort of, like, tempo deck, so it's right up your alley, Nick, but I'll share the list here. So there's a lot of lands for a Vintage deck, 20 lands, 4 Volcanic Island, 3 Scalding Tarn, 3 Underground Sea, 2 Bloodstained Mire, 2 Cavern of Souls, 2 Polluted Delta, a Mountain, an Island, a Mana Confluence, and a Strip Mine.
That mana base is not too bad, actually. It's maybe cheaper than some Legacy mana bases.
Okay, yeah, you will see that. Like,
it does have 7 duels in it, though.
It actually just has It does have 7. Okay, I thought it just had 5.
Yeah, like the most expensive ones too. But hey, yeah. Other than that,
other than power and that, it's an affordable deck. Yeah.
Otherwise, it's $13,674 TCG Myth.
yeah, I'm gonna tell you that. Let's see, 3. I looked at prices of power just because I was like interested in like seeing if I could move that way.
Yeah.
And I can tell you that, let's see, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So 9,000 at least of that is just power.
Yeah.
And then you're like
Black Lotus.
Yeah, Black Lotus is like 4. And that, I was like looking at 9,000 TCG low for like beat up power. So if you're looking at TCG mid power, you're looking at like 10, 5, 11, 12. So, you know, you're looking at like a legacy deck for everything that's not power.
Looks like you can get a heavily played Black Lotus from Unlimited. No, wait a second.
That's 3 grand?
Heavily played from Unlimited.
Is 3K?
2,988.77.
Yeah.
3K,
no big deal.
Yeah, or you, there's one for sale from Beta for $10,000, and the shipping is $1.01.
Yeah, 10K Beta Lotus.
How arbitrary that is, because if you're going to send a $10,000 card, you're not gonna spend $1.01 for shipping.
No top loader, just hope it gets there.
Just ship it, yeah. But so we continue to go through the rest of this.
All right, go on, sorry.
12 creatures, 3 Snapcaster Mage, 2 Jaleva Nephalia's Scourge.
Yeah, sweet.
I was about to read it. It's a 4-mana, 1 in Grixis. It's a 1/3 flyer. When Jaleva enters the battlefield, each player, exiles the top X cards of his or her library, where X is the amount of mana spent to cast Jaleva.
Always foreign vintage.
Whenever Jaleva attacks, you may cast an instant or sorcery exile with it without paying its mana cost. So
that's the commander one from like 2 years ago, yeah?
Yeah. So okay. Like, nice tinker, sweet recall, cast your time walk, cast your dig through time, your treasure cruise, your gifts ungiven. Whee! Yeah, and you get to cast all of your demonic tutor. Like, okay. 2 Vendilion Click, 2 Jace Varin's Prodigy. 1 Master of Waves, 1 Vencer Shaper Savant, 1 Izzet Staticaster. And then the instant sorceries and other spells. 3 Force of Will, 3 Lightning Bolt, 2 Mental Misstep, a Polygon's Command, a Hercule's Recall, a Preordain, a Time Walk, a Treasure Cruise. It's going to take a while because these are all on us. A Misdirection, a Ponder, a Recall, a Brainstorm, an Ancestral Recall, not a Hercule's Recall. A Brainstorm, a Dig Through Time. 4 Leyline of Anticipation. This guy went a little deep.
Yeah.
1 Liliana of the Veil, 1 Mox Sapphire, 1 Mox Ruby, 1 Mox Jet, 1 Black Lotus, 1 Dak Fate. And that's the deck.
And so I'm seeing Homeward Path in some of the sideboards. Is that because of Dak Fate?
Yes. I believe it says take control of all permanents you own.
Yeah, that's the land from Commander. Tap to gain your stuff.
Yeah, so you tap it to get your cards back from Dak Fate.
Nice. Cool.
Sideboard. Oh, go ahead.
The new red creature from Cons that can abuse that doesn't see any play. It's like the 2/1 tap it to draw 2 cards.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah. Does he see any vintage play?
No, too slow.
Okay.
Humble Defector.
That's
it.
Humble
Defector, yeah.
Yeah.
The sideboard of this deck, an Ingoture, 3 Pithy Needle, a Notion Thief, 2 Sudden Shock, a Toxic Deluge, 3 Yixit Jailer, 2 Pulverize, 2 Grok. So the cards, I'm sure that nobody that listens to this podcast probably know what they do. Yixit Jailer, it's a 2-mana, 2/1 cards in all graveyards, lose all abilities for 1 and a black. Zombie Wizard. And Pulverize is sacrifice 2 mountains instead of paying its cost. You may destroy all artifacts. So those are sort of the vintage-esque cards, because really Dredge can just kill you on turn 2. So you have to have a ton of dredge hate. I would say somewhere in the magnitude of, 4 to 7 pieces of hate for dredge.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, dredge is just, like, absolutely vicious. Because you think about it, they play a turn 1 Bazaar, and they tap it, and they discard 2 Golgari Grimtrolls. And they untap, and they tap Bazaar, and they dredge 12, discard 2 Golgari Grimtrolls and something else. Draw step, dredge 6. If they play another Bazaar, because it's not legendary, tap it, dredge 12, discard some cards, and if they, dread or turn a Fate Stitcher, that's their whole deck. Like, tap it, edge 12 more, that's the deck, you're down.
That's funny, because Bizarre, I'm looking at these lists, Bizarre is one of 8 lands in the deck and doesn't even add mana, so this is just manaless dredge.
Yeah, none of the lands add mana.
The other one's Petrified Field to get Bizarre back from your yard.
Correct. So either gets Bizarre back from your yard, or in the sideboard, you get the Dark Depths back. So you can put Dark Depths into play. Dread Return, Vampire Hexmage, Mega Dark Depths, and hit them with a Lasagna in the face.
Okay.
So that's sort of Lasagna. Another thing. That's the sideboard plan for Dredge, so that when you bring in your 7 pieces of Dredge hate, they have this other combo that just kills you.
Nice.
Yeah. So, like, this is just one of the many sweet legacy, or vintage, sorry, lists that you'll see. But there's Blue Moon, there's Splinter Twin, there's Clawblade. You can play whatever you want. As long as it's, like, playing reasonably powerful cards, and you have, like, you know, a thoughts for how to beat Workshop and the tax, thoughts for how to beat Dredge in the graveyard, and then, like, can line up against the blue decks, you can play, you know, whatever. You can play whatever combo you want, whatever control deck you want. There are even aggro decks. There's, like, just junk.
Nice.
With just, like, 4 null rods. 4 null rod junk. Like, null rod, go. You don't get to play power. And I have, you know, like, a Noble Hierarch and a Dark Confidant. Bet you I'm winning.
All right, Daryl, I'm sold. I'm going to go buy Mud real quick, and I'll meet you out there. When is this tournament?
This weekend.
All right. Let me see if I can book a flight, too.
Yeah, you have to pre-reg. Yeah, pre-reg by Saturday.
I mean, if I run out of cash, I'll just play my modern deck. That's vintage legal, right?
It is legal. but no, so I will be there Saturday, slinging Legacy, playing Thopters, trying to win a tournament. And then I'll try and see if I can get a set of power. And if I can't, I can't. And I will probably be at home on Sunday watching, or well, hopefully not at home on Sunday. Hopefully I'll be playing the top 8.
Yeah, right.
But if not playing the top 8, I'll be at home.
Set your goals, man.
Yeah. If not playing in the top 8, I'll be at home on Sunday watching some sweet, sweet vintage action.
Nice.
So that's sort of my very small and very brief and very non-covering vintage primer, because that's the sweet thing I'm super hyped to go see and do this weekend, is play Eternal Formats and watch people sling power, and it's going to be awesome. So
it is going to be awesome. I'm jealous.
You can watch it online, like, if you want to watch some vintage.
Yeah, that's true. I could do that. I could live vicariously through you.
I mean, I won't be playing vintage probably.
Feature match.
Yeah. You know, they don't want Thopter Spy Network on camera. That's a bad idea.
Yep. All right. Well, I think we better wrap up. You guys got anything else you want to throw in there?
I don't think so.
Oh, you know, we do this one thing, Nick. At the end of the cast, we do non-magic, whatever non-magic stuff that's going on this week or happened to you. So like, I'll start out by saying that I'm moving on Friday. So this is like my third move this summer. Not all my own. I've been helping one of my friends move, but I'm about done with that shit. But once I get the stuff in the house, I'm just going to leave it in boxes for the next one. I don't know. I'm just tired of lifting crap.
Don't unpack.
Yep.
That's the best idea.
All right. That I'm going to have to bleep. What time is in the recording? anyways, so that's my non-magic. I don't have much else going on. Going back to school next week, I talked about that, so I'm kind of bummed about not being able to sleep in until 9 again.
Not excited?
Yeah. In service. It's even better than school, actually. We get to, like, talk about standardized tests for 8 hours in a row.
Oh,
ooh.
God, just kill yourself. Like, that's horrible.
I think if I'm going to do it, I'll probably do it there to, like, make a point. I'll be, like, the martyr for all the other teachers that have to sit through it. I'll light myself on fire in the cafeteria.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Doing some Buddhist protests right now.
That's right. All right. Not funny. Sorry. Daryl.
No, that's kind of
offensive. Nick, what are you guys doing? What do you got going on?
Not a whole lot going on. I normally play Legacy on Wednesdays, but I didn't go today. And then I got a message from you 20 minutes ago saying I should be on this podcast. So
20 minutes before it started, to be fair.
Maybe. But Hearthstone expansion is coming out in a week, so that's cool. I play that a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not good at it. I'm decent, but I'm not legend with it. But that looks like a lot of fun.
Is it a full set, like the like a big set?
Yeah, I think it's like 200 cards or something like that. I don't know what exactly it is, but it's a big set that they're coming out with, and probably going to drop $50 on it just so I can get some packs, of them. Right? Yeah, buddy.
I haven't played for a while, but the last expansion that came out, there was like one or two cards that showed up in decks after that. And I was like, man, I bought it and I never even played through the wings. I didn't play through all of them. So I was just done with that game for a while.
Yeah.
The metagame doesn't change very fast.
This one, apparently the pros are talking about that the metagame's going to slow down a lot, but I don't see it. I think it's just going to be Face Hunter is going to be pretty dominant still.
Is that like the best deck right now?
Right now, it's like almost always the best deck. It's just a burn deck, and like there's not enough good life gain in Hearthstone to like stop it.
Yeah, that's too bad. They need to fix that, because it's demoralizing when you just lose to the Hunter's like hero ability.
That's so good. It's just, so like, built good.
In, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Daryl, how about you?
Going to Philadelphia. No, kidding. I did actually have my parents visit me this weekend, so that was really fun. Got to spend some time with the family. They came down, visited for a couple days, went to D.C. I got to play a lot of, like, regular cards.
Yeah.
Like spades, euchre, hearts.
Like Pokemon?
No. No, like the playing cards that you buy at the store, like the 52 card packs.
What is no the cost expansions? For a 52 card pack?
Like $3
for that. Good deal, cards. Man.
Yeah, we, what a deal!
We
yeah.
pay $4 for 15.
I know, what we're a joker. We some idiots. But no, so I got to spend some time with my family, got some nice home cooked meals. You know, nothing really wrong with life when that's happening for you, so.
Yeah. Alright, cool. Well, on that note, I think we better wrap up then. I made my announcements earlier in the cast, so we don't have much to say when it comes to that, but I'll remind you that. We'll take some emails if you're interested in being a part of that. Just let me know. We've also got a Twitter, and Daryl does that.
I mean, apparently I do it, even though I don't have a password to it. It's @card_knock_life. Again, the website, cardknocklifepodcast.com.
Yeah, thanks.
lame plugs, you know.
Lame plugs.
The lame self-promotion plugs at the end of every podcast.
Yeah. We also have Facebook.
We do have a Facebook, Card Knock Life.
I post just about everything on the Facebook, so if you want like a feed of like what's going on, you can just join that, and then you'll get the information that way. So, well, thanks, Nick, for hanging out with us. Hope you come back.
Alrighty, I enjoyed my time here.
Cool. All right, guys, good night.
Bye.